Well, now let's talk surgery. It's an inevitable part of our lives, whether we need it to continue living or if we use it to help diagnose a problem or if you elect to fix or mend something on your body. We all know about it, right? But what do scientists know about it? For years, we're told to fast before surgery, to not put food in our bodies for fear of some sort of reaction while under anesthesia. But some doctors actually push back on that notion as the body takes on severe trauma during surgery and needs energy and fuel to help with the healing process. The medical field is looking at that and other long-time procedures and wondering if there needs upgrades. But how do you change the way it's been done for years, especially when patients trust their doctors and develop relationships from generation to generation? For example, Abbott Labs commissioned a survey earlier this year about fasting before going under and found that a staggering number of patients said that their doctors told them that was standard operating procedure. Abbott has been working on making surgery more successful and more efficient and even borrowing procedures from other countries and continents to help make surgery as safe as possible and to push back on some of the myths in medicine. In studio with me tonight, Dr. Hakeem Buzamundo. He's a physician and head of research and development for Abbott's nutrition division. He leads a worldwide team of over 650 physicians and scientists working on nutrition and medicine. Dr. Buzamundo, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here.
Okay, Justin. So let's talk about this because anytime I've been in any situation myself or family members who've gone under the knife, it has been you have to fast 24 hours, 12 hours. Where does, first of all, talk about where fasting comes from, that notion, and then let's talk about debunking that.
Well, Justin, first let me tell you that I'm not surprised by what you're telling me and sharing tonight with our listeners. And before going into the details of when and why have we been doing that for a long time, I'd like to share with you a personal story and tell you why this topic is, I would say, close to my heart. And when I say close to my heart, I mean my words, because 16 years ago, I was diagnosed with a heart condition. And I was told that I need to go for a cardiac surgery. Big surprise for me, for my family. So I ended up in the hospital. And I do remember vividly these moments, as you may imagine. And at 7 p.m. after dinner, the nurse told me, now you're not going to eat and drink anything until tomorrow. And I said, okay, I'm good with that. The following day at 6 a.m., the surgeon comes to my room and tells me, you know, we have an issue, an emergency. You won't get in the operating room now. We will get you at 3 p.m. Okay, fine. At the end of the day, I left the operating room at 10 p.m.
Wow.
So this means that this was kind of more than 24 hours, 26
right.
hours of fasting.
I'm sure everyone listening right now who's had surgery feels the same. It's
the
like,
same.
That exactly happened to me, right?
And I can tell you that what I do remember is that I was thirsty, I was hungry, and more than anything else, I was anxious. And then following the surgery, I lost 10 pounds within 4 days. And this is where I asked myself, something must be wrong. And this is how I got into this type of topic and got excited and got to the point that I thought we need to do something about it.
Now, the myth is that you fast because you lose your reflux and ability to control your undigested food and you could throw up essentially in surgery. Isn't that the myth of what aspirate? I mean, tell me, obviously I'm simplifying it.
You're not simplifying at all, Justin. You're absolutely right. It's about this risk of shocking. And actually, believe it or not, this goes back to the 19th century, where physicians at that time believed without any scientific data that if they would allow their patients to eat or to drink, they would have an issue during the surgery. But again, no scientific data to back up that. And actually, the contrary, the opposite is true. In the mid-90s in Europe, a group started studying this myth, if I may say, and just considered that if you come up with certain elements related to the surgical procedure, you may reduce complications, you may reduce mortality, you may reduce the length of stay, and you may even reduce the costs. So they run multiple clinical studies, and guess what they found? Yes, we're impacting all these outcomes.
By not By not having food and water in someone's system, you correct. Open yourself up for other things, whether it be the lack of healing, infection, anything of those natures. But your body doesn't have fuel to actually start the healing process right after the moment.
You're absolutely correct. And the idea here is really to make people aware of this important topic, which is when you go into a surgical procedure, actually you're preparing yourself as if you would run a marathon. So are you a marathoner yourself, Justin?
Yeah, okay. Sure.
But pass. Just imagine for a second that you are. So you would spend 100 calories per mile during your marathon, which basically would make it 2,600 calories mm-hmm. for the entire marathon.
Yeah, that's amazing.
When you go for a surgery, you would burn more than 3,000 calories. So really what you would burn during a marathon. And then the question is, would you fast before a big race? And the answer is no. Obviously, I wouldn't do that. But what would you do before? Before you would exercise,
right?
You wouldn't smoke. You would reduce your alcohol consumption. And also you would make sure that you're getting these nutrients that would help protecting your muscles. Then you would have to go for protein-rich foods, but also for all these nutrients which would help you store all the energy within your muscle.
So dialing back just a bit, Dr. Buzzamundo, I'm interested in why, if it was the 90s and there were studies and clinical trials and the medical community came together and said, fasting is actually hurting us, why does it continue? And I don't put any blame on hospitals or doctors or things, because, even if I went into surgery tomorrow, I'm sure, 7 out of 10, you did the study earlier, 8 out of 10 doctors would say, okay, so this is your last meal. You guys fast from here on out till we have surgery in the morning. They will continue that practice. Why is that happening?
Well, there are multiple reasons for that. The first one, and you alluded to that, it's the myth. So, and it's difficult to just get rid of a myth. This is first thing. When you go to medical school, you are not thought to tell your patient, you need to get a carbohydrate, nutritional rich drink up to 2 hours before the surgery. You're not told that.
No.
And thirdly, although Europe has generated all this data, we didn't have many data generated out of the US. And I believe that now that this practice is expanding in the US, we will see more and more hospitals and health institutions in the U.S. adopting this type of protocol.
The issue here is, as well as scheduling, and like you talked about, the how long the stay is in the hospital and costs and things of that nature. But are we going to see more of the prescribed surgical procedure being, okay, we're going to schedule this surgery if it's not life-threatening. We're going to schedule it in 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Okay, you're going on a marathon-like training. You need to get on the treadmill. You have to lose this many pounds. You need to tighten your core. You need to essentially act as if you are getting ready for a big, race or, mm-hmm. or athletic event, even though you're having surgery. Is it possible that the protocol has to change to say that's part of the prescription?
So unless there's an absolute need to perform a surgical procedure very quickly, ideally you would always want to give your patients enough time to get prepared. And it could be 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks. But it's important to give them this window where they can prepare themselves physically, mentally, to just go through this stressful experience. Just like marathoners, you mm-hmm. don't prepare a marathon within a week. You need 6
right,
to 12
right.
weeks
absolutely.
Before doing that.
You're
so it's exactly the same principle. Yeah.
It's as we think about these things, and one of the head scratchers that comes out of this conversation is, I hope that the medical community, and when we talk about sharing data and the studies, even the studies you did at Abbott, that countries and continents and different parts of the world are sharing this information or finding a way to say that if in Germany they're coming up with new ways to think about colon surgery or heart surgery, that is finding its way to the United States. Is that because I always hear this, and this is all again, this anecdotal, but I hear of, and you always hear about it in athletes and things like that. The basketball player didn't go to the person in Los Angeles. They went to Germany for a different kind of knee surgery. I mean, where are we at a point where can we globalize medicine?
Justin, I must say that, you know, when it comes to living a healthier life, everything should be global. And from that perspective, when we look at these surgical procedures and the nutritional guidelines that are being developed, I must say that the American guidelines are very similar to the European guidelines. And for me, this is all good news because they could look at what has been done elsewhere, develop similar guidelines, and now getting that implemented. And you have very impressive examples here in the U.S. So if you look at the University of Michigan, they did implement a pre-operative nutritional guideline, which included nutrition and exercise. And guess what happened? The patients stayed 2 days less in the hospital, and the costs were reduced by 28%. There's a very interesting study which has been, I guess, published in JAMA in May this year. And this is a study that has been run in more than 20 Kaiser Permanent Center, 15,000 patients, and they did implement the so-called enhanced recovery after surgery protocol, and complications rate was reduced by 30%, mortality was reduced, and costs were reduced. So something is happening in the U.S.,
right. And
I'm glad to share this positive news.
Because, from your perch at Abbott, you know, when you're doing research and you're looking into nutrition and medicine, what does it take to get a full-on buy-in from the United States, from all the hospitals, public or otherwise, or university hospitals, to understand that there needs to be different protocols set up for surgical procedures? What's that take? I mean, is that from the government? Is that from awareness? What does it take to change the myth?
It's mainly about awareness. So we need to communicate. And when I say we, it's not only about Abbott. It's about our communities. It's about academia. But, you know, eventually, if government can help also with that, that's great. Because just think from a health cost perspective, this is a huge burden on our health system.
Yeah.
So there's also interest for our government to go down this road.
It's a very interesting topic. Dr. Hakeem Buzamundo is the physician and head of research and development for Abbott's nutrition division, Abbott Labs, up here, right here in Chicago. He leads a worldwide team of 650 physicians and scientists working on nutrition and medicine. We're talking about the myth about surgical procedures, specifically about fasting. Dr. Buzamundo, great to meet you. Thanks for coming in and sharing your work.
Thank you,
thanks
Justin,
for talking about this issue.